Hello，good morning. Hi.
Okay, Judge Willett, we're ready.
All right, good morning to both of you. We're going to hear argument now in case number 20-60448, Jai V. Garland. Ms. Thomas, take it away whenever you're ready.
Okay, good morning to your honors, and I want to thank the panel for granting our joint request to appear via video this morning. May it please the court, Jihan Thomas appearing for petitioners today. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes rebuttal time. I ask this court to remand this case to the agency for two reasons. First, the board decision denying reopening by refusing to address petitioner eligibility for cancellation of removal is premised on a clear error of the law in light of the Supreme Court decision in Ms. Chavez v. Garland. I believe the board relied on matter of Mendoza-Hernandez and Capula-Cortez, which has been invalidated by the Supreme Court decision, which held that the stop time rule for purpose of cancellation requires that the agent or the government serves one single document that provides all the requisite notice enumerated under the 8 USC 1229. I understand that this is the board's sua sponte power, but I also understand that this court reviews legal conclusions de novo, since the board's decision is premised on an entirely clear error of the law. It is appropriate for this court to remand back to the agency to determine this issue under its sua sponte power. The second reason I asked this court to remand this case to the board is the petitioner evidence presented with the motion to reopen demonstrate the changed country condition in Indonesia that was material and could not have been presented at their former hearing. And I'd like to start by quoting a sister Circuit Court of Appeal in Sihon Tong v. Session. Motions to reopen are a steep uphill climb, but that mountaintop is not entirely out of reach. And in our case, Your Honor, I say that that mountaintop is not out of reach because I've shown evidence that Christians are being slashed by swords as they're praying in churches. I've shown Christians that have been thrown with Molotov bomb and they are killed. I've shown bombing of churches with parents and children that kill children, including Dewi's friend. Her children died, and we've shown their picture at ROP 374. I've shown angry organized mobs of Muslims roaming the streets of the capital, trying to threaten the lives of Christians. I have shown hundreds of thousands of people voicing death threats against the Chinese in Indonesia. I've shown that people were paid to create bombs to burn Chinese shops and provoke masses again to attack Chinese and create another massive riot. I've shown that one out of four students are willing to wage jihad in Indonesia to establish an Islamic caliphate. I've shown that people from Indonesia has flocked to Syria to fly abroad with ISIS. I've shown that Indonesian authorities now conceded that hundreds of their people have flocked into received training from ISIS and committed the bombing of the largest city in Surabaya. I've shown the implementation of Sharia law against Christian, where Christian are either flogged or canned and accept punishment. I've showed that anti-blasphemy laws that have been used and exploited against Christian that are now being imprisoned for a pastor who has, you know, shared his face with a taxi driver. He was in prison for 4 years. I have a lady who have just complained about a mosque, a speaker. She was in prison for a year and a half. I have somebody who just complain about little minor stuff, including a small comment about Islam on Facebook. He has to face 4 years in prison. I've also shown that the Indonesian Constitutional Court holding the central government could no longer repeal local Sharia ordinance that is adopted across in Indonesia. So the Aceh province only implement Sharia law, but implementation of Sharia-inspired bylaws are all over across Indonesia. I've also showed that the guilty verdict of Ahok was not just one symbolic event, but it shows a rising of religious tension in Indonesia. I've shown also that Joko, the current president, could not abolish the abusive Sharia law. I've shown minority in Indonesia are under threats of growing Muslim threats. So we are not now showing an area where Muslim are trying to gain power like in the old year 2000, where the Maluku violence was in 1999. And I also like to address the court to the report of the year 2000. The Maluku violence in 1999 completely subsided because the report says at the end of January 2000, the situation became calmer. And as of June 30, 2000, reports of violence were rare. Also, during the year 2000, the government regularly addressed the need of interreligious harmony. The previous president, Wahid, had a long-standing advocacy for religious tolerance, and the government at that time in the year 2000 opposed strongly any Muslim group advocating implementation of Sharia law. This is not what we have today. And the relevant period of time, the year 2000, which the order of removal was entered until the year 2019, was reviewed by other sister courts who have all came into the same conclusion. There is change country conditions in Indonesia. I respectfully request from this court to employ the same reasoning of these other sister courts. In C1 session, the court has reviewed exactly year 2006 to 2018. And this court is reviewing the period of time between 2000 to 2019. The First Circuit found that the conditions have steadily deteriorated over the past 12 years. In the Third Circuit, in Lim v. Attorney General, the Third Circuit reviewed the years 2000 to 2004 through 2018. Again, the Third Circuit concluded that the conviction was a symbolic of rising religious intolerance in Indonesia. Again, the Second Circuit in Tanasota reviewed the period between 2014 to 2018. Again, the Second Circuit reviewed and filed that anti-blasphemy laws against Christian and the first imposition of Sharia on Muslims are key evidence supporting change country condition. Again, the Ninth Circuit in Salim v. Lynch reviewed the period from 2003 to 2016 and held there's change country conditions in Indonesia. The 11th Circuit, again in Krishnawati versus the United States, again reviewed the period between 2014 to 2018 and all came to the same conclusion. There is change country conditions in Indonesia.
Well, the board let me ask you one question, please. Now, the change, you had to show a change of country conditions in order to get around the procedural bar. Is that the issue here?
That is correct, Your Honor. In order for me to go around the bar, I have to show changed country conditions in Indonesia. I agree to that. But the evidence, we've submitted 33 articles demonstrating changed country conditions. It is not the same. Well, exactly, the board dismissed it, said that's intermittent violence. But the characterization of the evidence of intermittent violence was characterized by the board with the First Circuit saying that is persistent negative country condition. The Sihon Tong v. Session dismissed that characterization of persistent country condition, said no, the board, you are in error. There is change country condition. My characterization of the intermittent violence, which they made in this court, they labeled it into different things. They said in the Third Circuit, that is a situation where it is, sorry about that. It is one of many of the periodic flare-up. The Third Circuit rejected that characterization of change country condition as many of the periodic flare-up. With the Ninth Circuit, they said this is quantitative evidence. And the Ninth Circuit in Salim Village said, no, this is not quantitative. This is qualitative evidence. We've presented to this court qualitative evidence of change country condition. What I see in the year 2000 was government opposed strongly any Muslim group advocating implementation of Sharia law. I saw there were fewer reports of anti-Chinese violence. I've shown that the situation became calmer. I've shown there were few cases of attacks on churches ranging from minor damage to total destruction. I don't see a Christian that have been flogged and caned. I did not see people have been imprisoned for minor offenses for Christian. I haven't seen angry mobs of 100,000 marching the street, either voicing death threats against the Chinese or threatening the lives of Christians. I have not seen bombing that killing parents and children. I mean, the change is completely on. And if there is no change, of course, there would be no numerosity bar, as this court we briefed, and also as we briefed the issues, me and the government, at least we agreed on this issue that the Congress codification of a change country condition to the exception of the 90 days time bar reflects an intent to allow qualifying persecution claims in any time, therefore comports with the regulation to waive any numerical bar. Also, the BIA precedential decision by a three board member in matter of JJ has also interpreted the statute and found the intent of the Congress was to both waive time and numerical bar. And this court in Duca v. Holder said that it would give Chevron deference to a precedential decision by the board. So light of all this, I asked this court to grant the petition based on the fact that we presented change country conditions in Indonesia and two clear error of law by the board as reflected by the Supreme Court in Ms. B. Chavez. I'm available to answer any questions.
Counsel.
And thank you for your time.
Do you have a question? I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, Your Honor, could you please repeat?
No, it's no problem at all. I appreciate your presentation this morning.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I'm a little hung up on the
Your Honor, I can't see your face. I don't know. I'm scared to press something. I don't know if I say it. Got it. Okay. Yes, now I can see Your Honor. I apologize. I had the screen.
No problem at all. So I want to talk a little bit about the number bar, and I want to try to understand your position on it. The way it looks to me is that Congress imposes a number bar that says you get one motion to reopen. They provide one exception to the statutory number bar in subparagraph C, Romanet 4, which I take it you don't think you satisfy. And then Congress also provides a changed country conditions exception to the time bar. But normally when we're interpreting statutes, when we see Congress put an exception in one piece of the statute, it's an implied prohibition on that exception in the part of the statute where they don't mention it. So if they have a number bar with no changed country conditions exception, and then they have a time bar with a changed country circumstances exception, we usually interpret this statute to say there is no changed country conditions exception to the number bar. That is the first provision where it's missing. So can you help me understand how to read the statute differently? I take your point that other people have done it, other courts have done it, I should say. I just don't understand how that comports with the normal rules of statutory interpretation.
Well, Your Honor, my understanding of the statute was silent about the number bar with the change country conditions, but the agency are also, or the Attorney General and the agency can interpret the statute. So both the Attorney General and the agency in interpreting the statute made a reasonable determination or a permissible construction of the statute by stating that if there is no time bar for any person to come forward and apply for asylum based on changed country condition, then it would be also comport to not put a number bar on that request. And I would say that interpretation is reasonable because it harmonizes another statute, which is 1158-2D, which allows an asylum claim, which is denied, can come back forward and apply a second time if he can show change country condition. So the statute in another scenario allows a person to come back for a second time to apply for asylum based on change country condition. So I ask that this court defer to the agency in interpretation of that silent statute in both the Attorney General regulation under section 1003.2 and 1003.23, and also the BIA decision. With respect to the VAWA exception, I think that was crafted only for better spouses or better spouses, parents, and children.
So can I just ask you one final question on,
yes, please,
on the regulation?
Judge.
So, and I appreciate you bringing it up. So I heard you reference section 1003.2c3. So as I'm looking at that regulation in front of me, it says that the time and numerical limitations set forth in paragraph C2, that is of the regulations. So it's an exception to the regulations number bar, but it doesn't say anything about creating an exception to the statute's number bar. You see what I mean? So it doesn't even purport to be interpreting the statute. It's just interpreting the regulatory time bar as a separate legal concept.
Well, Your Honor, what I see here is I understand that the statute was silent, but then the Attorney General, in promulgating that entire regulation, found that there is both way that they would waive both time and number bar as well. And also, when the BIA was confronted again with a request to interpret the statute on the silence of whether there is a numerical bar on that, it comported with regulations again and said, no, we don't believe that the intent of the Congress, and I quote from matter of JJ, there is no indication in legislative history of the INA section 240C7 that enacting the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act, Congress mm-hmm. did not intend to also waive the numerical limitation as the regulation had previously done. And honest to God, it would be illogical and contrary to the intent to prohibit the same change country condition persecution claim due to limitation on the number of permissible motion asserting such change country conditions. Your Honor, I'm just gonna give you an exception. Like for example, Egypt, this is where I'm from. There's change country condition when Mubarak collapsed, okay? But then Muslim emboldened came in and many Christians came forward. But guess what? When Sisi came back 2016 to 2000, we have bombing like crazy, one after the other. That was another change country conditions in Egypt. So we could not bar a Christian from coming forward here when Muslim became emboldened following the Mubarak regime, or a Christian coming forward when ISIS came into Egypt and started bombing nonstop. So to limit or put a bar on the number of motion would actually preclude persecuted people that would come forward and seek protection from this country. And I know my clients are not your regular Christian. They are active. They publicly display their faith. Their senior pastor called them, they are pillar in his church. They created and developed a mega Christian event in Walnut, and the 45,000 appear on this event every year. They create a Bible study every week at their home. They teach Christian. People have transformed. There we said, without our faith, our life would stop. So I want you to save, I'm asking you to save two Christian lives here, please. And I ask you to review the evidence and look it in a fair way. I understand that the board does not have to write exegesis on every contention, but at least in this case, I believe the board reacted to the evidence and did not provide an analysis why all these evidence before it does not constitute change country condition, while other sister courts have found the same. And also the board itself under the Trump administration order have opened many Chinese, Christian, Indonesian cases before. So why deny my client's case? That's what I don't understand. They've opened multiple of cases, and you can see that.
Thomas, I'm going to have you stop at this point. Thank you very much for your argument. We have it.
Thank you, honors.
Appreciate it. We're going to turn to Ms. Corey now, representing the Attorney General.
Hi. May it please the court, Jennifer Corey on behalf of the Attorney General. First off, I just want to address Denise Chavez's issue and say that we agree with petitioners that issue should be remanded back to the board due to the intervening case law that came out of the Supreme Court in Denise Chavez. So the cancellation of removal claim should be reheard by the board based on that new law. But we contend that the court can go forward on the change country conditions issue in the case and the asylum claim that was the petitioner sought reopening on. I want to first say, and I'll get back to this later, that none of the courts have actually found that there's change country conditions have been proven and met. It's that they have remanded back to the board to do a proper analysis of the evidence. And in those cases, the board did a cursory review, or what the courts characterized as a cursory review. And here the board has engaged with the evidence and done the proper analysis. So it's readily distinguishable from all of those published cases that petitioners refer to. Reopening carries a really heavy burden with it. And there is a strong public interest in finality. And in this case, petitioners entered the country in 1998 and 1999. They were ordered removed after not appearing at their immigration court hearing in 2000. And they did not assert an asylum claim at all until 2018. So that's a heavy burden to reopen at this point in time, about 20 years after their entry, and 19 years after they've been ordered removed. For changed country conditions, it's not just showing that there's an increase in violence or that there's been some change in the activity in a country that affects the petitioners. It's showing that there's been such a change, they now have a prima facie showing of eligibility for asylum, that they now prima facie can show a well-founded fear of persecution, and that is to show that they will be, that there is a reasonable possibility that they will be targeted for persecution in Indonesia. The board in this case reasonably found that petitioners did not meet their heavy burden, and that decision is reviewed for an abuse of discretion, as I'm sure this court is familiar with, but I just want to emphasize that it can't be reversed unless it's arbitrary or capricious and lacks rationale. But before I get to how the board did properly engage with the evidence in this case, I just wanted to say that I wanted to point out a couple things about petitioner's evidence that really make it a bit muddled and amorphous as to what their claim is. Their evidence of prior conditions, the conditions they claim were present in 2000, were three pieces of evidence, one being the International Religious Freedom Report from 2000, the second being a 2010 article on the prosecution of persons who committed church bombings, and the third being 2017 remarks by Mike Pence on Indonesia, calling it an inspiration to the world. That was evidence of 2000. I don't understand what the 2010 and 2017 articles have to do with what was occurring in 2000. Then their evidence that they submitted for 2018, when they submitted their motion to reopen, were 33 articles. It is voluminous, but those articles span from 2016 to 2018. And it's just unclear if they're submitting 2017 documents for the prior country conditions and 2016 documents for the current country conditions, what exactly the time period is here and how you can show change between country conditions evidence that seems to overlap with each other. And the other thing I want to point out is that if the big turning point was the charging a hook and the conviction, the charge came in 2016 and the demonstrations occurred in 2016 to 2017 when the blasphemy conviction occurred, it's unclear why petitioners did not file their motion to reopen at that point. But the board did take judicial notice of the 2017 International Religious Freedom Report. It summarized the findings of the 2000 International Religious Freedom Report. It talked about what happened to a hook. It did acknowledge that conservative Muslims groups have gained power and influence in Indonesia. There is change to that extent, but again, the board straightforwardly said that petitioners did not show prima facie evidence of asylum eligibility here. That is to show that these changed country conditions it didn't meet the asylum threshold of changed country conditions because these changes don't amount to the change that would show eligibility for asylum. So as they have not shown a prima facie case that they would be singled out for persecution based in Indonesia based on changed country conditions, the board's analysis was rational and was not an abuse of discretion. We also agree with petitioners to the extent that we agree that the number bar, that there's an exception to the number bar on motions to reopen, and that the regulations comport with the intent of Congress, although the statute is silent. The statute was meant to allow persecution claims arising at any time, and that it would seem to thwart that intent to not allow a second motion to reopen should country conditions change, as such that a persecution claim does arise.
Counsel, has some other court considered, I know you, there's a couple of cases I see where in dicta courts have sort of said, oh, you know, there's this exception to the number bar, and then cites the regulation. Has any court ever grappled with the fact that the statute isn't silent, right? The statute creates an exception in subparagraph C, Romanet 4.
Right.
And it also creates changed country conditions exceptions to the time bar, as you just pointed out. Has any court ever grappled with this question of statutory interpretation as to whether Congress actually authorized changed country conditions exceptions to the number bar?
I don't believe so, not in my research. And I did contact my director about this. He's been at my office for 40 years, I believe. And he said he's never seen that argument before. I think courts have just accepted it because the intent seems to be pretty explicit. And I think that you're exactly correct that the statute doesn't mention this number exception, but it just has been widely accepted. And as far as I know in my research and what I've asked of colleagues in my office, it has never been grappled with.
I appreciate your candor on it. It does seem odd to me too. The thing that seems doubly odd to me, and I'm curious about the government's position on this, I asked your friend on the other side, is that normally when we're looking at a statute and we see Congress make an exception, it impliedly excludes other exceptions. And it seems particularly glaring here, given that they knew how to make a changed country circumstances exception, they just did it later, not in the number bar, but in the time bar. And so it seems really hard to sort of square any of that and say, well, Congress, in your words, you know, the clear intent would have been to authorize an exception to the number bar.
I agree, and that's a complicated question. I mean, I'll go down to the bottom line again. I really wish I could give you some fulsome answer, but that would require a lot of research and a lot of time. And if that's something the court wants, obviously that is something we can do. But I think bottom line, it's just that the intent is explicit, and I don't know why Congress did not include it explicitly in the number where they did include other exceptions. And so I very much understand the question. I just do not have a clear answer. I'm sorry.
I appreciate your candor. Thank you.
You know, let me ask you this. Does the Attorney General have the right to waive these procedural bars?
Does the Attorney General have the right to waive? Yes. I mean, you mean the board can sue a sponte?
No, I mean the Attorney General waive it.
I don't believe that we could waive the procedural bar. I'm sorry if I'm not completely.
Well, you know, there's some procedural rules that relate to claims handling that the Attorney General can waive.
Okay.
They haven't waived either of these in any event.
No. Waive the bar?
Yes.
No, not that I know of, Your Honor. No, if a bar applies, it applies, and if there's an exception that the petitioner can meet, then that's the exception they have to meet for that bar.
And your position is the number bar bars the reopening because you argue that the board's decision shouldn't be overturned, that there's no change in country conditions.
Yeah. Well, yes, Your Honor.
Why should we remand it then? What's the purpose of the remand?
The purpose of the remand is entirely separate from the asylum and, well, on remand, the board can find the case still number barred and still time barred.
You mean
but it can also exercise its sua sponte reopening power.
Is that the only way it could do that?
Sua sponte.
Can do that anyway, can't it? Can it do it anyway? I mean, if we affirm if we affirm the order, don't they have the right to come in with a petition for sua sponte reopening?
Yes, they can then file a motion to reopen again with the board, and the board can sua sponte reopen at that point. Yes, Your Honor.
Why should we remand if we accept your argument?
Well, because the board has not spoken to the cancellation of removal claim yet in this case, given with the new Supreme Court precedent. They applied law that now the Supreme Court has overruled. And while the board may not exercise its sua sponte, they could not, they may choose not to exercise their sua sponte power to reopen. Remand seems appropriate here where we would want the board to speak first regarding the petitioner's cancellation of removal claim in light of the new precedent.
But there's the board had an alternative holding, didn't it, that the claim was procedurally barred?
Yes, the claim is procedurally barred, but and that's a finding they had, procedurally barred, but they chose not to exercise their sua sponte reopening power based on law that the Supreme Court has now rejected. So it would make sense to have the board reconsider that part.
We don't have any jurisdiction to ask them to open to grant a motion to reopen sua sponte.
No, I agree with that. I don't think that it's not asking the board to affirmatively sua sponte reopen. It's just remanding for reconsideration of intervening precedent.
Okay.
If the court doesn't have any more questions, I'll conclude on that.
Okay, Ms. Corey, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Ms. Thomas, we're back to you for any rebuttal you might have.
Okay, first of all, I want to thank my opposing counsel. She has been wonderful throughout the whole process. With respect to the remand issue on the sua sponte authority of the board for Judge Davis, please, he's asking why do we remand? The board, Your Honor, refused to address at all the issue of the eligibility of cancellation, relying on a clear error of the law that was invalidated by the Supreme Court. If this court remands it back to the board to allow it to even initiate its decision in light of intervening law, that would be great for the respondent, because they have shown that they have one daughter with a very severe heart condition. That I'm sure that the board, if they exercise their sua sponte, given the intervening law and the medical condition of the daughter and the good moral character of these petitioners before this court and before the board, I think the board would send it back to the court. With respect to the government position that they've never acted to bring in asylum claims except years later, no, they tried every time. They tried 1, 2, 3, 4 times, and each time their attorneys failed them. First attorney was disbarred because he never communicated with his clients. The second attorney was ineffective. He failed to file a Lozada claim against the former counsel and file an application. And then they were abused by another law student. So they tried. The government said, why did they waited until to file the motion to reopen if they're claiming that the change country condition was in 2016. Well, Dewi brought that motion to reopen after the bombing in her own city happened in May 2018. Her friend children died, and she would definitely be scared to go back to Indonesia and be bombed and have her children die as well. This what instilled a fear in Dewi's heart to come forward and request a motion to reopen. The government is saying they didn't show a prima facie eligibility for asylum. I asked this court to employ a reasoning of a sister court, Malti v. Ashcroft. The Ninth Circuit said the critical question is when a person did not have a claim, now have a well-founded fear of persecution. Of course, someone who has three bombing of three churches in her city, her friend, her two children die, the picture of them at ROP 374, of course she would have a well-founded fear and a prima facie eligibility. The board placed a stringent standard on my clients by saying they have to show either a pattern of practice or that they will be singled out for persecution. All they have to show is, under Tativosen v. Holder, another circuit court has said, in a motion to reopen, the board would err to require a conclusive showing of relief. All they have to show is if, based on the fact and upon reopening, in a developed hearing, new facts would show a well-founded fear. So I understand this court have many issues to deal with country condition, which I believe was voluminous. I don't believe that the Congress intended not to allow multiple motions if person can come as forward as many times to seek a country condition, because in one country you can have many change country conditions. So to preclude or put a number bar on a motion, it would definitely be illogical to preclude people persecuted to come forward and seek protection. And thank you today, Your Honors, and I don't have anything else.
Okay, Ms. Thomas, thank you so much. Thank you both for appearing with us today. The case will be taken under advisement. And I think that wraps up our argued cases for the week. So the court will adjourn under the regular order. Thank you both.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Stay safe.